On this episode of Risk, I think I'm drowning. I think this is it. And a part of me said, oh, well, a part of me had that like ADHD frustration, like, oh, well, you idiot. Of course you did this. Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is another one of our Risk Reacts video episodes where I listen to a story for the first time and give you my instant reactions. Now, if you're hearing this on our podcast feed, just know there's a link to the video version on YouTube in the show notes of the episode. But if you're watching the video of this, make sure to check out our audio podcast. Risk has been putting out thousands of truly jaw-dropping true stories since 2009. And you can find us on any podcast app or at risk-show.com. Now, for the first time, I'm bringing on a guest with me for one of these episodes, Scott Johnson from the What Was That Like podcast is here to present today's story from his podcast. Welcome, Scott.
Kevin, I am so happy to be here. I've been listening to Risk for years. This is great. It's a lot of fun. And I was listening even before I had my own show. My podcast now is called What Was That Like? And each episode is a conversation with someone who's been through something extremely unusual, like a plane crash or a grizzly bear attack or something like that. And the episode we're about to listen to is with my guest, Greg. He's a storyteller based in New York City, and he's going to talk about something that happened to him. And also, just to let you know, it's an interview podcast. So when we start up, first you're going to hear me speaking, and then shortly after that, you'll hear Greg telling his crazy story.
Phenomenal. All right. I'm already a fan of your podcast, so I'm really looking forward to this one.
We'll be right back.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
We're back.
This happened in Las Vegas. What were you doing in Las Vegas?
I do these public art commissions all over the world. New York, I mean, just as far flung as Azerbaijan and Saskatchewan. And I won a commission to do the floor of the Las Vegas Terminal D airport. So I flew to Las Vegas. I stayed at the Rio Casino. And then each day I come down the elevator and go through the din of the slot machines and then head over to the airport where I work on my public art project. And that project was, I decided to take the flight map of Las Vegas and do the whole floor of the terminal in terrazzo. And so I spent a lot of time on my hands and knees with a team of people laying out these zinc strips. There was this 80-foot tall, huge glass wall, which looked across the runways and across the desert. And I could see these mountains in the distance. And at the highest mountain, at the middle of it, kind of fingering its way down a ravine, was a glacier. And I said to myself, you know what I'm going to do? I was also pretty miserable in my life going from the casino to the airport back and forth every day. I was not a happy puppy. So I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to rent a car, get up early, I'm going to drive to the glacier and climb it. Now, I knew nothing about glaciers. I knew nothing about mountain climbing, but that was my mission.
Now, you live in New York City.
Right.
Obviously, New York does have mountains, but I mean, you're in lower Manhattan. What was the attraction of climbing a glacier?
The attraction was, well, you know, there's a famous story about, I think it was Edward Mallory, who perished with his partner on his third attempt to climb Mount Everest. And he said, you climb a mountain because it's there. I was miserable in this very urban, even though I was in Las Vegas, I was in this very tacky urban situation. The whole city is made out of smoke and mirrors, like, you know, cigarettes.
Yeah, smoking. I know. Everything is fake, of course.
Everything is fake. Every column you knock on is fake. So I'm in this existence going back and forth between the airport and the hotel. And I just thought that would be just a great thing to do. I decided to do it.
And you said Sunday was your day off. That was your day you were gonna yeah. head to the mountains.
Yes.
And was this like at the end of your work there or in the middle of it? Or like, did you have to go back to work Monday?
Yeah, midway through.
Oh, okay.
I think I was there for 3 months, which is a brutal 3 months. I mean, Las Vegas is just not a nice place to spend time. So in the middle of this, I picked my Sunday, rented my car the night before, got up bright and early, you know, drove out of the casino and through the street grid of Las Vegas. And then I got to this state highway that just was a straight shot, interestingly enough, directly toward the mountain that had the glacier on it.
How long did you think it was going to take you to get there?
Yeah, I thought it would be, again, I never got a map. I was so incredibly unprepared. It's breathtaking. But I thought just from judging, and of course, very hard to judge distances across, you know, a flat desert. So I thought I'd be there in half an hour. And so I started across to drive straight across. And it was a very hot, I mean, it was still early in the morning, very hot. And cars were like looming above the macadam through the heat waves as I drove across, which was a bad sign in my mind because it just meant it was going to be a really hot day. After half an hour, I was still halfway there. And then slowly I got to some, I wouldn't call them foothills. I would just say that the desert began to rise up a little bit. I came to a scattering of ranch houses. And then above the ranch houses, there was a pine forest. And once I got into the pine forest, I stopped seeing the glacier. I couldn't see anything above me. And it was pretty dense pines. I did roll down my window, and there was this wonderful, sweet smell of nature that was so missing inside the casino or the airport.
Oh, yeah. That's like going from one extreme to the other. You're in the middle of nature now.
Exactly. And I was very pleased with that. And so I drove up, and I had no idea where I was going. Didn't have a map, as I mentioned. At each fork, and it was a dirt road, each fork in the dirt road, I picked the fork that went, ascended more. And, you know, my engine was sort of straining, and it was pretty steep at this point. My engine was sort of straining against the climb. And I just kept picking the right fork up and up and up. And slowly the trees got a little smaller. The altitude got higher. I was a little bit slightly dizzy because I could sort of feel the altitude change.
Okay. If the air density or the oxygen was lower, you're getting up in some altitude then.
Yes, I am. And it's taken me some time. As the trees got shorter and more stunted, every so often I'd come to a place where I could look through the trees and see the glacier, just a glimpse of it. So I was very excited about, you know, it was going to work. I was actually going to get to the right place. And finally, I broke out through some scrub, and I was like, I couldn't have been better placed. I was like right at the foot of the glacier, or, you know, across some terrain to the foot of the glacier. So I was like really excited. And it wasn't really a knapsack. It wasn't a belly pack. It was sort of halfway in between. I put that on, and I got my water bottle, and I started to walk across. And I was very pleased that I had the good sense. I mean, it was very bright, so I didn't bring sunglasses, which was a mistake. But I did bring my construction boots from the construction job. And I'm glad I wore those because they were nice, hard construction boots. When I finally crossed over onto the glacier, it was pretty steep, and I had to herringbone with my feet, sort of smash my feet in a herringbone pattern to keep from sliding backwards.
How cold was it?
It wasn't that cold, but you could feel the chill of the ice itself.
Plus the fact that I know whenever I've been out in really cold temperatures, as long as I'm moving, I don't feel cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Because your blood's circulating. And so you started to make your way up the side of this mountain. Were you walking on ground, on just frozen ground, or on ice?
It was icy. It was icy with sort of corn snow on top, but it was ice. As I walked up, it was slow going. And I decided, first of all, I turned around a bunch of times and looked back, and I could see Las Vegas sort of in a haze in the distance. I was completely like gung-ho for this experience.
As an aside to this, how old were you when you did this?
I was 52.
And how would you describe your physical fitness, your condition at that time? I mean, were you intimidated by this climb, or you say, hey, I can do this?
Nope, I was completely gung-ho. I've always worked out, so I was in pretty good shape. But I just was so hopelessly unprepared and unaware that I was unprepared. So I'm climbing up, and I decide, you know, this would be a whole lot easier if I cut across to the rocks. So as I cut across, I could see there was a gap between the rocky ridge coming down and the glacier, which was formed because the rocks soaked up the sun, and then they melted the glacier back a little bit. But what I was unaware of was that during the very cold nights, a strong wind would come across this glacier and make a little thin ice coating that extended over the larger part of the gap, which I was totally unaware of. So the gap was maybe a foot wide, and I thought I could walk right over and step across it. But in fact, this ice skin was another 2 or 3 feet that was completely invisible. I just thought it was more that was the glacier. So as I approached it, there was a moment when I just suddenly, I just fell, and I fell about 30 feet down into this crevasse. And as I fell, I didn't hit my head on the rocks or the ice. I hit my right shoulder really badly and sort of bounced against the left one. Then I bloodied my knees, my shins. And at the bottom where the ice face and the rocks came together, it was sort of came to a point. And as when I hit, my feet were jammed into that point.
Yeah, you said it was a 30-foot drop.
That's a guess. I mean, it might have been 40, but it was a long drop. It was a drop.
It's enough that you can really pick up some speed as you're falling. So that when you hit, and you didn't hit like a floor, you hit where these two walls gradually came together. So it was
exactly.
Sounds like a very tight, claustrophobic position.
It was. The first thing I did when I hit, I just panicked, and I sort of clawed with my fingers on both sides to try to get out, and that just bloodied all of my fingers, which was just a huge mistake. And then I said, Greg, get a hold of yourself, man. And so I just held still. I let my breathing recover, let my heart rate go down. And then I thought to myself, wow, not a single soul in the world knows you're here. I told nobody on the job. I told nobody in an email. I told nobody in a phone call. I just planned this thing, you know, to do it. And I said, God, Greg, you are so fucked. And when I said that, it sort of echoed up and down the crevasse. And you could see maybe the crevasse had a slow curve to it. You could see maybe 20 feet in one direction. It was very hard to turn in the other direction because of my shoulder, but it was about the same distance. And I just thought, God damn it, man. You just totally fucked.
I'm just trying to think of your mental state at this time. And you just kind of summed it up there. But it seems like the only options now for someone, if you couldn't get out, would be the airport. Your people that you were working for at the airport eventually are going to notice that you're not there.
But they have no idea where I am.
Right. They don't know where you are. And but what about the car rental company? I mean, did this was probably before they put GPS trackers in cars, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 And I don't think, I told nobody I was going to do this. So there's no reason why they should think the guy rented a car to go climb a glacier.
Right. Yeah. You're not even close to where you were staying.
Most of the crew I was working with also, I caught them cheating on the thickness of the terrazzo. And it was a crew out of Los Angeles. And so they were not happy with me because I reported them to the general contractor. But that went nowhere. I found a letter in doing the research for this conversation where I reported it. Nobody got back to me. So they were not happy with me. It was not a friendly situation. So there's no reason they would know that, A, I rented a car, B, I wanted to go to the glacier. So it could be many months before anybody found me.
So your current status, I'm just picturing this, you're injured, you're winded, afraid, of course,
yes,
and you're in pain.
Yep.
What do you do at that point?
Well, I thought to myself, God, what if the glacier shifts? What if there's an ice slide? What if it gets really cold at night and I just freeze to death And I'm so scared. And then I'm also angry at myself. Also, during the fall, my water bottle and my little belly pack, which had a sandwich and some fruit in it, didn't fall with me. They got caught along the way. I cried a little bit, and then I actually prayed, and I'm a lifelong atheist. And I prayed to God to help me out, which I found kind of, that was the only momentary comic relief, because I thought, you know, what are you doing, man? This is like nuts. But I asked God to help me. And then I think I also lost consciousness a couple of times, because when I all of a sudden woke up and it was a little later. I was really cold and my blood sugar had dropped. I was shivering. And then I thought, God, I thought of my family, my friends. I may never see them again. And all because of my own fault.
You had mentioned that your blood sugar dropped.
Yeah.
What made you aware of that?
I was shivering, which also could have been the cold, but I'm a little bit hypoglycemic, so I always know when it feels like, you know, I'm kind of faint because of my blood sugar level.
Oh, so you know how to recognize that then?
Yes. Yeah. I think I fell asleep and woke up really cold. I wasn't concerned about water because I just took some icy chips and put them in my mouth, and I got my first taste of kind of bitter glacial water. But it definitely slaked my thirst. And I did that for a while. And then all of a sudden, my little belly pack knapsack just dropped from the heaven, and it must have been dislodged by a wind or by maybe it was hooked funny. And all of a sudden it comes down. I can't quite reach it, but it's there.
Did you have the slightest thought that, thank you, God?
Well, I did. I kind of refused to go there and thought, okay. Coincidence. You know, that's anytime there's a kind of a religious miracle, I just say, you know, it's atoms in the void and it's just a coincidence. But I did. I certainly entertained the thoughts for a minute. I was able to twist and put aside the pain on my shoulder and get a hold of it and eat my sandwich and my piece of fruit and my crackers, which was a huge boost. And all of a sudden, I started to feel better. And then I heard someone else down there around the curve. And I said, hello, is anybody there? I'm hurt. Are you there? Who's there? And no noise. Then like 20 minutes later, I hear it again. And I'm said, who's there? Help me. Do you need help? Again, nothing. It gets quiet again. And then I say, well, I can go around the corner with this new energy I have from my sandwich. I can sort of shinny along and go around the corner and see who's there.
Could you unwedge your boots?
Yes. It took a while. I had to play with different techniques, and I was trying to protect my shoulder the whole time, which didn't work very well. But finally, I just decided I'm going to go for it, and I just was able to kind of ignore the pain in my shoulder and turn a little bit. And it was very hard going because my feet kept getting caught. And there was one more episode where I heard somebody and then they didn't answer. And I thought, well, maybe they're really hurt. So I finally got slowly at the curving crevasse. I get around it and there's a deer, a female deer, and she's bloodied and she's hurt as bad or worse than me. But when she sees me, she is completely freaked out. And she struggles to jump up. She actually jumps up and tries to flee from me. And because she has four sharp hooves and she's motivated by complete, you know, flat out fear, you know, flight fear, she goes around, she continues around the curving crevasse.
Away from you.
Yeah. And as I follow her, and I couldn't keep up with her because she was moving, she started up the side of the, it's hard to describe actually the way it looked, but she disappeared around the corner. Then I caught up with her and she was struggling to get up the crevasse. And the crevasse seemed to be inclined a little bit or not as deep. And then she really got a hold and she took off like a bullet and she went up and up and up. And then she broke through the skin that was, you know, the ice skin that was there. And then she was gone. And I was able to more slowly work my way up. And suddenly I'm out. And I'm overjoyed. I mean, I'm crying. I'm laughing. I'm thankful. And I could see her bounding up the glacier. She was, you know, hightailing it up the glacier, and she's gone. And now I'm like, my emotions are all over the place because I'm going to live. I'm going to see my family. Everything is like, everything is great. Although I am bloodied pretty much top to bottom. And so I'm hobbling down the ice. I was feeling joy for sure. Thankfulness. I'm not sure who I was thanking, but I was very thankful. I felt a little giddy because there is a funny side to joy. And then I also felt disappointed, I think, because I was just mad at myself that I had got myself in this predicament. I'm also hobbling along. I mean, I'm definitely, you know, it's like Valley Forge. I'm just definitely hobbling along to get to my car. So I had all these emotions going at once, and I just sort of, as I hobbled down, I was experiencing all those. And then as I got to my car, another car pulled up, which was totally surreal because I had just been through this, you know, life and death situation. And here's another car. They get out and say, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Oh man, yeah, I'm okay, but let me give you some advice." And I started to explain to them about the edge of the glacier. And they said, no, this isn't a glacier. There are no glaciers. There's no above ground glaciers in Nevada. This is just the last of the snowmelt from the winter. So I thought, great. So not only have I made all these other mistakes, but I'm not even climbing up a glacier. I'm climbing up the last of the snow. And then the guy, he said, "Can we help you?" And we went through a little negotiation. I said, "No, I think I'm okay. I just want to get out of here. You know, I'm okay." So
you were done with nature for that day, huh?
Yes, exactly. Totally done with nature. And as I, in the car, it was very hard to drive because my right shoulder was killing me. As I slowly went down the mountain, I started to get really self-abusive. Because I just thought, you know, you just made so many mistakes. You told nobody where you were. You didn't have the right equipment. You didn't have sunglasses. You didn't have a map. You didn't do anything right. What is wrong with you, man? You got a problem. And while I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, what's made me successful as an artist is that most art commissions have like 1,000 applicants or 200 applicants, and you're going to fail. But I always head into them as if I'm going to win. And I have this kind of belief that I can do it. And that is very helpful. And that is sort of empowers you and makes you more of a winner. And so that's a good side of my fearlessness. I'm not afraid to fail. But the bad side of it is I also can charge into situations like this one where I'm gung-ho and I have no common sense and nothing that holds me back. And as I drove along, I thought, you know, if you don't get a hold of this desire to run headlong into unknown situations where you don't know the terrain, you don't know the psychology, you haven't looked at a map, you haven't inquired of anybody who's done it, what it's like, you haven't gone on Google, although Google didn't exist in those days, but you haven't inquired of any experts, and, you know, this could cost you your life, so you need to get a hold of this. And then I thought to myself, you know, maybe you should get a tattoo that says something like, "Never miss an opportunity to stop and think." And then I said to myself, you know what? Not only that, but maybe you should do the tattoo in reverse and do it on your forehead so that every time you look in the mirror, you see stop and think. And that's kind of the last self-critical thought I had before I hit the straight highway back to that mirage of Las Vegas in the distance.
The idea about having no fear going into a situation where you really don't know what to expect, if you could change that, is that a character trait that you would eliminate?
Well, it's very helpful in presentations. Most people get really uptight before they present. There's many situations where it's very handy to be fearless. One of the interesting things is for years, I mean, I've done like 200 plus public art commissions, and every one was a whole process, which finally ended up in a final interview, where there was usually three finalists. And then I would make my presentation And I had this trick. I would go into the room, and it's usually a bunch of people behind a table. You're sitting in a hot seat. And I would find a reason to stand up, and I'd bring a bronze sample or whatever it was I was going to do the project in, and go around the table, and I would touch people's shoulders and have them look at the samples. And this was a great technique, because when you touch somebody, there's a physical contact, and it really helped my batting average.
Yeah, that's another level of intimacy that is...
Exactly. But also, I'm not afraid to do it. Most people are sitting in the hot seat, and they're just, you know, nervous.
Do you still want to climb an actual glacier?
Probably not. It's kind of hardwired in me now as a fear. I mean, I might. Maybe it's a good way to get over my fear.
Well, that's, I mean, if you're only going to have fear of one thing, that's a good thing to be afraid of, I guess.
Yeah. Well, if I was going to climb a glacier, I would do it with a guide.
Oh, that would make sense. Yeah,
and I would have incredible prep beforehand.
Oh my gosh. I feel like this story was specifically chosen for me.
Do you have a fear of glaciers?
No, I have that ADHD tendency to take a very risky opportunity to just leap into something without having thought it through. And that is actually like the number one advice from the biggest of all ADHD researchers: stop and think.
Hence the name of your show. You're willing to take a risk, right?
Yes, exactly. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, Scott and I will talk a bit more about Greg's story.
We'll be right back.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, that was intense. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. And, you know, I've noticed this about a lot of the interviews that you do where you must do some great prep to have people so good at the moment-by-moment scenic detail of things.
I do. I try to coach them on that.
Yeah, yeah. That's phenomenal. Yeah. And it did, like, it immediately, I was diagnosed with severe ADHD in 2019, and suddenly all of these stories that I had told for Risk made a new kind of sense to me, because I started learning about this thing. Like, there's literally this popular theory that ADHD is a natural evolutionary trait from the hunters in hunter-gatherer society, the people who do head out into danger and are taking in all this, you know, like they have to have all this stimulus, taking in all this information, and then come back and share stories. So they're the people who would most likely be willing to take risks and maybe not make it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. The ones that don't come back.
Right. And yeah, you know, it's so funny. Like, I was in Los Angeles maybe 2 or 3 years ago to do a Risk show there, and was staying with a friend, and he said, hey, just a few blocks away, there's a mountain that we like to climb every now and then. But, you know, you could probably just have fun walking around the park. And I got to that mountain, and I was like, no, I'm going to climb that mountain. And I was wearing, like, the equivalent of like Chuck Taylor, like with like the soles worn off, and you had like no sunscreen, and you know, it was just a disaster walking up that mountain. I was like damn near, you know, fried and, you know, hobbled, you know, like my feet were, it was interesting that getting back down was far harder because I just couldn't get a good grip on the ground I was walking on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was one of those cases of, oh, you know, the time to have stopped and thought through this would have been like any time, like any time before you're, say, 10% or 25% up the mountain.
Yes.
But there is that thing that can also kick in, which is to really be in the mood for it, you know, to really be like, no, I've, now that I've started this, you know, I really want to follow through and I'm just so in the mood for it. I loved his description of Las Vegas. I too am not a big fan, like or Atlantic City, you know, these places that are filled with casinos. I'm just like, not into that. And I could totally relate to his kind of despondency of 3 months between an airport and a casino sort of culture and wanting to get the hell out of there. But yeah, you know, and it's so funny too, because in retrospect, it all sounds super foolish.
Oh, it's easy to look back on it now. Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's funny, you know, I was thinking this may be a good example of the Dunning-Kruger effect, you know, where the ones who are the most confident in their skills or their knowledge are often the ones that are completely unaware that they have no knowledge about it.
Right, you know? Right.
And he was just full of confidence. Misplaced confidence, unfortunately.
Yes, yes. You know, there's a famous interview with Orson Welles about Citizen Kane that, you know, he had such amazing success in the theater in New York and then with radio, especially after the War of the Worlds incident happened, that, you know, in Hollywood, they were like, this genius kid, let's just give him full artistic control of his own movie and just let him direct it and go for it. And he said that one of the things that he attributes to that movie turning out so well is that he had no idea how to make a movie. And he would constantly pitch things to the cinematographer and the editors and that sort of thing. And they would say, no, you just don't do it that way. That's not the way movies are made. And he would be like, well, let's give it a shot anyway. And they grew to love that about him, you know, especially his cinematographer was like, wow, this is really, really fun working with someone who's kind of willing to just keep doing shit that the Hollywood studio system would never allow. So yeah, there is that thing where sometimes being a newbie, that's a lot of the reason that I stopped listening to other storytelling shows shortly after I started Risk. When I was in the process of developing Risk, I would listen to This American Life or the Moth podcast to get a feel for things. But I didn't want to expose myself to too much of that because I wanted to still be kind of a newbie, uneducated and trying whatever.
I can see that for sure. Yeah. You know, you look at these other shows and they're so successful, and even subconsciously, you might think we should do it this way, you know, because we know that works, you know, but.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that formulas can really set into place and become pretty hard locked in your mind. Yeah.
And it can get boring.
Yeah. And that's another ADHD thing is, oh my gosh, I need some stimulus. I need to do something that I've never done before. Like, I'm about to move to Thailand in, you know, August or September. And this is a fantasy that I've had for 7 years now. And it's really interesting because I visited again in January and I sat down with a lot of people who have been there for a long time. And they said, there's only so much research you can do. The truth is, you are going to get here and shit is going to start hitting the fan. And you're just going to see if you can adapt or not.
Yeah. As long as you're expecting that. Yeah.
Right. Oh, but yeah, it was, I so appreciate it. And also, he sounds like such a down-to-earth guy.
He is.
You know, like, I was happy to relate to someone who otherwise sounds so, you know, level-headed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very good at a lot of his stories. They're self-deprecating humor, and he recognizes that in himself. And he recognizes the value of that being entertaining, you know, to others.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we, when we're especially teaching storytelling for business, we always show people the Steve Jobs commencement speech at Stanford University, where he chose to tell three stories of the greatest failures in his life, his biggest missteps. Mm. And people just love that, you know, because it's very, very relatable. It's more relatable, I think, than I climbed a mountain successfully, you know?
Right. For sure.
And it's just so funny that he was like intent on it being a glacier, which sounds far worse even than a mountain, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, what challenge would there be in climbing a mountain? You know, it's got to be a glacier. And that's, I thought that was the funniest part of it. After all of that, the irony is he wasn't even on a glacier.
Right.
That's so crazy.
And that, it was really funny when he said, oh, what if the glacier shifts? And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, they do that, don't they? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And there's also the thing of asking for help or just kind of alerting people to what your plans are and having ways that you can ask for help if you need it. Like sometimes I do so much asking for help that I go through a period of, oh, well, I'm just going to do this thing on my own. And sometimes that works out just fine. And then sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, no, there's so many people who would have probably been able to give you some good advice about how to go about this. Mm-hmm. I really have learned because I was on a film shoot in the Pacific Northwest last January. And a friend of mine on the shoot is a big hiker. And he said, oh, there's this like medium to hard level mountain to climb, you know, near here. Do you want to go with me? And because I was playing a role in the movie of a sheriff who had like, you know, tough boots and a, you know, nice big jacket and all that sort of thing. I was like, yeah, I think I can do that. And by the time we got back down from that mountain, I felt as if I was crippled. I felt like I was like, I hope I can continue walking when I'm back on camera tomorrow. Mm. And I was kind of trying to hide from him just how terribly hard I was finding the whole thing. So now I'm very, very, you know, I think of this about going to Thailand because there's, of course, the super famous story of the 12 boys and their soccer coach going into the cave up by Chiang Mai and just not having anticipated that the thing would flood because it wasn't the rainy season. Mm-hmm. And now I do every now and then think of that story and think of past times that I've done this sort of thing and just think to myself, okay, you know, do that thing that Dr. Bartlett suggests of stopping to think more often. Yeah. Oh, my God. But it was also really beautiful how there's the deer in it. Yeah. And that sort of tug of war between atheism and, you know, thanking something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just so impressed with the work that you do.
Well, I always say I'm never going to run out of content because there's crazy stories and weird things happening all the time. I don't do any paranormal, but these are, you know, real life things. And people love them. As you know, the power of a good story.
Yeah. And we both of our podcasts focus on like high stakes sort of stuff where You know, it's funny, like what I really appreciate about these kind of stories is even if a person would never or has never been in a situation like that, there's some aspect of the emotion in the story or the thought patterns in a story that they will be able to relate to.
Oh, yeah, I definitely did. When he was telling me this story the first time and he's down there and his feet are wedged in that, you know, at the bottom, and he's thinking, this, I may have just come to the end of my life.
Totally.
It could be it. And for something that was totally preventable. It was his own mistake.
Oh, God.
That's just,
yeah.
I just think that, what despair, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. So I have this story about being on the Green Tortoise bus, which is a hippie bus that goes from New York to San Francisco. I don't know if it still exists or not. But I went on that in the mid-90s when I was about 25 or so. And at one point, the bus stopped at the Colorado River, and we were just so, like, tired of being in that bus at that point, and it was so hot, and it just felt like freedom when the bus stopped right by this sparkling, I just remember how silvery and sparkling the river was, and I guess I didn't put two and two together that, like, the Germans, because there were a bunch of German tourists on the bus, were athletes. A lot of them were athletes, and just like immediately just like tore off their clothes and started swimming across the river, which had like serious, like kind of rapid-y sort of water flow. And, you know, I was in this attitude that whole trip of, you're supposed to say yes, you know, and jumped in there and, you know, about a quarter of the way through realizing, oh, you know what, I never really took swimming lessons. I mean, I took like the first round of swimming lessons where you're like, I don't know, blowing bubbles or you got holding on to a thing. Yeah. and it's interesting. You said that moment of him worrying, oh my gosh, this might be the end of me. What struck me there is that he has all that time to think that. Mm. Whereas in the river, I thought, oh my God, I think I'm drowning. I think this is it. And a part of me said, oh, well, a part of me had that like ADHD frustration, like, oh, well, you idiot, of course you did this. And then another part of me, like, that's the kind of main event of the story, is that another part of me said, no, this is not the time to be beating yourself up and thinking like that. You got to go. Mm-hmm. So it is surreal to hear about someone's story where they realize, oh, this might be the end. And then they have time to meditate on that.
Hours, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So tell me more about Greg.
Greg is a really interesting guy. If I had to choose one word to describe him, I think it would be the word artist. He's got, as you mentioned in the story, he's got art installations all over the world, but a lot around New York City, like bronze reliefs And that's why he was in Las Vegas as well. He's, you know, doing something there at the airport. I was with him in Manhattan a couple of years ago because that's where he lives. And he showed me, Kevin, you've probably seen this, all around Union Square in the sidewalk are these bronze, big square bronze things that talk about the history and some event that happened there.
Yeah.
Next time you're there, you look in the corner, you'll see his name, Greg Lefebvre, right there. Oh,
very, very cool.
So, yeah. So he showed me all around and all the stuff that he's done. He's a pretty cool guy. But as far as artist, he's also an artist in terms of storytelling. He has his own podcast. It's called The Compulsive Storyteller. And it's all about his own personal stories from his life. And they all, a lot of them anyway, have this common theme. He gets himself into some kind of a jam and somehow he gets out of it and he can wrap it up in 10 or 15 minutes. And it's a, you know, it's a funny story. So that's the amazing story we heard today, he told on his show it's the episode called Glacier. Mm-hmm. And that's at thecompulsivestoryteller.com. And he's also on Instagram as well, at Greg_Lefebvre. But yeah, pretty interesting guy.
Yeah. And I think that that is so fun, that kind of diving in, making mistakes. I think that's one of the reasons that both of our shows are so interesting is that they tend to focus on situations where a person is in over their head, you know, not how did I get here exactly?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, how long ago did you start? What was that like?
I started in 2018. So it's been almost not quite 7 years that I've been doing this show.
Wow. And, amazing.
Yeah. And I've got over 200 episodes.
Amazing.
A lot of them just like this. And it's just every episode, a regular person comes on. And these aren't typically public speakers or, you know, people of note. They're just some regular person who had this one weird thing happen to them. And they talk about it. They tell all the details of what happened. You know, situations like being attacked by a shark or getting hit by a tractor trailer or falling into a volcano. We also do happy stories sometimes, too. Like we had the woman who went on The Price is Right and won the showcase.
Oh, amazing.
So, and of course, and also on my show, Greg's story is available, the full version. What we heard today was sort of an abridged version, but it's called Greg Fell Into a Crevasse. And yeah, anyone who wants to listen can search on any podcast app for the name What Was That Like? Or at the website, whatwasthatlike.com.
That's great. And I highly recommend it. You do such an incredible job of getting such, you know, stories that make you feel like you're really there along with them experiencing it.
You do it amazing. As well, Kevin. You are the groundbreaker for this type of podcast, I think.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening along with me. Our Risk Reacts series is doing great so far. You can find all of these episodes at risk-show.com/riskreacts. Let us know what you think. And if you've heard an amazing story on another podcast and you think, oh, Kevin Allison has got to hear this one, let us know. Leave a comment below this video on this page or on the episode page of our website. Let us know the story title and who the storyteller is, but don't spoil it, right? So I have to not know this information, but our staff will find it. Don't spoil what the story is about, and let the rest be a surprise to us. You can find us on social media, including YouTube, at Risk Show, and always on our website, risk-show.com. Folks, today's the day.
Hey, let's take a risk.
Awesome. This is when I would be having an ADHD meltdown if I was in your shoes.
Make way. Coming through. Rolling deep with my entourage here. Make way.
Sorry, are you on GIFGAF or something?
Yeah, and they just saved me £400 on this new Google Pixel 9 Pro.
That explains the swagger. What's with all the ducklings?
My entourage. Say hi, guys. Get the latest phones at great prices from GIFGAF. Ends August 10th. Terms apply. See GIFGAF.com for more info.
Hello, podcast fans. I'm Bradley Simpson. When I think about the stories that stayed with me, one that immediately comes to mind is Ratatouille. A talented rat who just wants to cook. And honestly, I was glued to my screen straight away. And now I'm hooked on FX's The Bear on Disney+. I love everything about it. I love the styling, the tension, the drama. It's the best thing I've watched in ages. Only the greatest stories stay with you for a lifetime. And honestly, it's true. So, what will be your next great story on Disney+?
Copyright 2025 Disney and its related entities. 18+. Subscription required.